Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
you play football.
Coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Double digits, 99 days until the Steelers and New England Patriots get it on in New England. But until then, we're going to give you a steady diet of What's Hot podcast. This is either five or six, but we're losing count of the shows we're rolling up, but not losing count of the days we have left until the 2015 season finally kicks off. We have a lot to discuss on this edition of What's Hot, but first and foremost, let's introduce my co-anchor. My name is Brian Diardo, and let's welcome in Chris Carter to the show. And Chris, a lot to talk about tonight, and I'm sure you're just as excited as I am to get the regular season started.
Oh, man, less than 100 days. It's LeVon Kirkland, Brett Keisel, 99 left. We can count it down all the way there. I'm pretty sure you and I could at least name one Steeler for every number. But I am very excited. I'm glad we got a good show lined up for you guys, for you listeners out there right now.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We're going to talk about wide receivers for the Steelers. It's kind of been the hot topic so far at OTAs. There's been several stories in the national website circuits, along with our website behind the steel curtain. And you know, like I said, there's a lot of good things being said about our receiver core. Obviously, Antonio Brown and his work ethic, that's been a hot button of discussion. There's been articles before and after practice of the work he's been doing with some of our guys, Sean Spence among them. Sammy Coates, the new third-round draft pick, there's been a lot of talk about him and how well he's already adjusted to the team. So we'll talk about them. We'll also talk about the best receiver combos or receiving units in Steelers history. Could this one become or be one of the best ones, if not the best one? So we'll kind of go back in history, talk about some of the other units. And also, if you also want to call into the show and give us your top five, if you could have a dream team, top five best Steeler unit in history. So you can pick five wide receivers in order. Who would they be? We've got ours, and we'll reveal those to you at the conclusion of the show in our final segment. And if you want to call into the show, please dial up at 347-850-8581. Again, to call into the show and give us your dream team of your top five Steelers receivers that you'd want on a team for a season. Dial in and let us know at 347-850-8581. We'll also talk about Jerome Bettis. He had some very flattering things to say about Le'Veon Bell. We'll get to that. We'll also talk about beyond Bell, who are the other best running backs in the NFL. Chris and I will give you our thoughts on those. Also, again, we'll finish the show talking about those Steeler receivers and, again, what we think about where they could be in both the NFL receiving rankings among the receiving units in the league and historically among the Steelers. And also, too, we will talk about Adrian Peterson. He tweeted quite a long string of things directed at the NFL Players Association and the NFL owners. Pretty much he's disgusted about the contract situation in the NFL. And it's funny because I'm sure all the 70 Steelers are like, negotiations, what? What's that? We didn't have those. We'll talk about that, and I know Chris and I both have things to say about that as well. But let's start with the receivers, Chris.
All right.
We knew last year when we brought in Martavis Bryant, the way he finished the season, eight touchdowns, averaged about 20 yards a reception. He was definitely a big splash for us the second half of the season and helped our offense explode the way it did. We obviously have AB and you know, he's put up numbers, you know, the numbers he's put together the last 2 years. This is a crazy stat, and I looked it up earlier this week. His stats, you know, receptions, yards, and touchdowns, the only two players to have about as many or more than him, Chris Carter in 94-95 and Jerry Rice during that same span, 94-95. So he's in elite company. We've brought in Sammy Coates, who, you know, people have talked about the drops in college. That was kind of the knock on him. But he didn't get a lot of chances to catch the ball. He only had 82 catches, but the guy's an explosive playmaker. Unlike Brian the year before, a young guy, you know, raw. Brian only had 62 catches in college. But so far, people are saying not only is Coates catching the ball, the Coates' speed and his game-breaking ability has already, you know, shown in several situations at OTA so far. He's turned some you know, crossing routes, and he's gone upfield and made some big plays. So that's obviously very promising if you're a Steelers fan. Not as promising if you're an opposition or a defensive back that's going to face the Steelers. Also, Marcus Wheaton, you know, he's one of those guys that you and I talked about, you know, at length last week, Chris, just pretty much that a good receiver, a nice possession receiver. First career, he averages about 12 yards a catch. He averaged about 12.5, 12.6 last year. So he's not going to stretch the field for you, but he's a nice security blanket. You know, he caught almost 60 balls last season, and we're expecting that number to go up this year. They said he's had a good camp, and they said that he even said that Coach Mike Tomlin has challenged him to be more of a playmaker, and they said he caught a deep ball earlier in practice earlier this week in OTAs. That was pretty impressive. So, you know, all good things so far that we're hearing. You know, I guess, Chris, you know, talk about how excited Steelers fans should be about the receiving core and, you know, where you think they stand among the other great receiving cores in the NFL. We obviously know Denver's got a nice receiving core. There's some other teams that are out there that have decent units. Where do you think they stand?
Well, when you're talking about the Steelers' current lineup of receivers, you're talking about a series of athletes, of guys. None of these guys, you can call them pure possession receivers. These guys can be burners. These guys can be route runners. And these guys, they have a lot of speed under them. Like going into last season, I think we mentioned this last week, our number two projected receiver was Lance Moore. Lance Moore is not a speedy guy. You know, he's got that possession title because, you know, he won't make a lot of great, you know, crazy plays and making people miss and getting you know, putting the burners on and leaving defenders behind him. But you can rely on him if you can get the ball in his range and he can make the catch. But Lance Moore only got us 198 yards last season with two touchdowns. Not nearly the amount of production we were looking from him. This year, you're looking at a combination in Wheaton, Bryant, and Brown as top three receivers. All three of them have getaway speed. Wheaton really has shown a lot of potential to be a guy that can run the tight routes, make the clutch plays. You know, if you throw a tight pass to the sideline, he can get a first down. And Bryant, you were just saying he has that raw ability to him. And if you remember, early in the preseason, he fumbled a few balls early. He dropped some big passes, and you know, there was a lot of questions as to, is this guy really football ready? And sure enough, when he got his opportunity against Houston, he blew it up, did great. Now the question is, can we get that from Sammy Coates? You know, a lot of people said, oh, Sammy Coates is you know, he drops a lot and everything. But, you know, he made a lot of big plays in college, and that's what we're looking for. We don't need a guy that's going to catch, you know, 100 passes this season. We need the guy that if we need someone to stretch the field and take advantage of the defense, looking at Bryant and looking at Brown and looking at Wheaton and looking at Bell and looking at Heath. You know, we have so many weapons on offense that if this guy can just use his speed, get past defenders, you know, because the team, they're not going to put, like when we play the Seahawks, it's most likely they're not going to just put Earl Thomas to guard, you know, defensive players in the secondary to guard Sammy Coates. So he's going to get matchup opportunities, and that's where I think that's where his biggest contributions can be, and that's where I think the Steelers receiving core is, you know, that we have a lot of reason to be excited. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago, NFL.com, a few of their writers, they made a list of the top five receiving cores in the league, and the Steelers weren't in that, and a lot of Steelers fans were, well, you know, that's disappointing. But at the same time, you know, you kind of have to look at it and say, well, you know what, Bryant did have 8 touchdowns, but he only had 549 yards, and it's on for half a season. So there's a lot of things we're still looking for. Wheaton had 644 yards, decent. Those are like Emmanuel Sanders numbers before he, you know, had his final season in Pittsburgh. But you want to see more. But the key is you just have right now the league's best receiver in Antonio Brown, and that's what I'm most excited about. This guy, if nothing else, Sammy Coates, Martavis Bryant, and Marcus Wheaton, their athleticism and their abilities will get, I hope, will scare defenses away from just double guarding Antonio Brown and give him that many more opportunities to make the big play.
I agree. And you know, the thing is, you know, last season that people, you know, probably why the Steelers weren't ranked in the top five was because there was a pretty big deficiency between Brown and what we were getting from the rest of our true receivers. Because, you know, Marcus Wheaton was fine last year, but he was fourth on the team in reception through receiving yards. The guys ahead of him, the guy named Le'Veon Bell, which everybody knows pretty well, you know, he was number two in catches and I think, yeah, and receiving yards. Heath Miller was third. So you have a wide receiver, mm-hmm. a running back, and a tight end in your top three. So I think that was mainly, you know, the main reason why. And then obviously, you know, Darius Hayward-Bay is more of a special teams guy. I don't think he's going to contribute a lot to the receivers unless we have injuries. Or we spread it out and go five wide. Or, you know, and the fact that, you know, Lance Moore was banged up all year, like you alluded to. So, you know, I think, you know, people voting out there, and I think just analysts in general, they just want to see, you know, what this team can do for a whole season because they have a lot of potential. That's why I said in a previous show with you that I'm okay with it. And, again, I always like being the underdog. I always like our guys needing something to prove. So it kind of falls in line with that whole mentality of staying hungry, trying to prove people wrong, and you know, using that kind of motivation to help you produce. You know, another thing that's kind of been discussed is, you know, back to Antonio Brown. You know, I don't know about you. You do this, Chris. You know, when I write opinions, I might believe in it, but sometimes I'll say arguably just because I don't want it to come off as I'm, you know, I never really like people that you have sports debates with and they say, well, 72 Dolphins are the best team ever. A, that's not true. But, you know, B, that's an opinion. And I don't like to be gregarious like that. So normally I say, you know, Antonio Brown, arguably the greatest receiver in the NFL. But, you know, in the article I wrote, there was this big, you know, comment thread. And the basic, you know, theme of the thread was, he's the best receiver. No more of this arguably, you know, business. Should we just take the tag off and just kind of anoint him? Kind of like how the NBA at some point has anointed LeBron as the best player in the NBA. Should we just go ahead and do that with Antonio Brown?
Hey, I mean, you heard me when I said – I didn't use the argument. I said he's the best receiver in the NFL. And I think your article early this week that talked about his numbers and how unparalleled – well, paralleled where they were with some of the best receivers in the history of the NFL, and Jerry Rice and Marvin Harrison, and, of course, you know, my namesake, Chris Carter. You know, I still have his jersey. But he's doing things right now that no one else is doing. And as many people that want to diffuse and say, oh, the 50 yards and five catches every game isn't a real stat, it's one of those things that, you know, you may never have thought about it before, but that's significant. If you're getting five catches and at least 50 yards a game, that means that they're not shutting you down. You're getting the football no matter what. You're getting open. And especially right now, the NFL is starting to see, look at, you know, who are the better receivers in this open passing league and, you know, this new era of football. Antonio Brown is the best at doing it, at least for when you go back at least for the past 2 years, no one's done it better. The only person you can say that had more yards than him 2 years ago was Josh Gordon, and he didn't even play at all last year. But, you know, Antonio Brown, he's been doing it, and now he's in an offense that is going to have that many more experienced weapons. Bryant's not going to be nearly as raw. Wheaton's going to have a lot more experience in the system because his first year was a wash. He really didn't get to play that much because he was hurt the whole time. So now you got two guys under him that have more experience. You got a really healthy offensive line, as long as they stay healthy, knock on wood. And, you know, you have Le'Veon Bell, and there's so many things that are part of this offense right now that are happy for Steelers fans and happy for Antonio Brown. So when you look at this, you know, if he continues to blow the top off and just get, you know, 1,600 plus yards, and that's ridiculous. Those ridiculous records. If you think of 1,600 yards, you know, that's not something that we're used to, and we have a lot of great receivers in our history as a franchise. So I think you don't have to say arguably. Right now, he is the best. And that's why I say it.
Good enough for me, Chris. Good enough for me. And, you know, when I think about the other best receivers, you know, I think there was a little stretch where Andre Johnson was the best. You know, obviously we haven't had a guy that's, like, had a consistent string since, like, Keo and Moss. And mentioning Owens, I was going to put his numbers in my story, but he never had a dominating stretch like this. Keo always had decent numbers, but he never had numbers like this. Just consistently in the 500-600-yard range. Ditto for Michael Irvin. I think 95, he had a pretty monstrous season. But really what we're seeing, like you said, I mean, Marvin Harrison, too. I mean, he had a couple seasons where he was up there. But really, I mean, AB's up there with three other guys. I don't know how Marvin's done in the Hall of Fame yet, but he will be. Actually got kind of off the button, but I want to ask you something, Chris, and then we'll kind of go ahead and I'll ask you about the other great Steeler combos in NFL history. And, you know, I think I would say the other receiver, too, is Dez out in Dallas. I think he's definitely at the table when you're talking about greatest receivers in the NFL today. I just think he needs to be more consistent and more versatile. You know, and with AB, too, I remember watching the Browns game this year that we regrettably lost. He still made tough catches. He was still fighting, to your point that you can't shut him down. And it goes back to Drew Pearson in Super Bowl 13. He was held without a catch with 6 minutes to go, and then he ended up with four and kind of the garbage time when the Steelers were back in prevent. So, you know, really, I mean, that's never going to happen to AB, and it hasn't, where, you know, it's late in the game and he hasn't made an impact yet. But, you know, with my other, you know, question about, you know, the Hall of Fame and receivers, why do you think it takes so long for receivers to get in? And I know I'm going to get flack for this, but Tim Brown's in the Hall of Fame, and I have to honestly argue it, because I was looking at his stats, and I know he didn't have great quarterbacks, so that's kind of par for why his statistics weren't great. But, like, you know, if he's in the Hall of Fame and Marvin Harrison isn't, then I got a serious problem. You know, why do you think, just your opinion, do you think receivers have to wait so long to get in?
Well, there's a lot of receivers out there. There have been so many, so that I think that I always have my own personal discrepancies with how the Hall of Fame works. But, you know, when you're looking at Marvin Harrison, yeah, he had a questionable leave of the NFL. There was the case where he had the dispute with the guy. I never even fully understood what that situation was. But as far as I understood, it completely tarnished, you know, the end of his career, and people stopped talking about him. You know, and people that love football, like you and myself, you know, we're like, man, Marvin Harrison, that was a bad man. But, you know, as far as culture and talking about him and being a household name, he just wasn't. He wasn't once he phased out of Indianapolis. And, you know, everyone always talked about Peyton Manning. And I think that also might play into Marvin Harrison's career and his standing, is that he was just the guy that Peyton threw to all the time. And I think, honestly, Reggie Wayne gets a lot of the same flack. I think he's one of the best receivers to ever play the game as well. And, in fact, on the all-time receiving yards, he's just a few hundred yards behind Marvin Harrison. If he just has, like, you know, I think 35 yards, and he'll catch Marvin Harrison career-wise. And, you know, you could definitely attribute to both those guys having Peyton Manning, but I do think Marvin Harrison, his route running, his hands, he wasn't a huge guy. He was just very good at his job. And that's someone that, you know, I think, you know, it was a travesty when I felt like Chris Carter was passed over in the Hall of Fame. And I was a little biased about it, but at the same time, that man was one of the greatest hands that I had in the history of the league. And I think if you look up the top 10 on NFL Network, when they talk about the greatest hands, they give it to Chris Carter. And, you know, there can be a lot of debate in who had the best. But, you know, when you're talking about great receivers, I think the bigger, there's so many of them. And, you know, if you come in with any issues, the Hall of Fame, they make you wait. I mean, it took Lynn Swann and John Stallworth a long time to make the Hall of Fame. And a lot of people, and Chuck Knoll talked about how, you know, they inducted a guy, Timmy McDonald, that played during Knoll's era of the playing days. And he was like, I could cover Timmy McDonald. That guy, that's a joke. That was one of the few times in Chuck Knoll's career that he ever spoke out about something like Hall of Fame voting and people not getting in. And he was insulted that McDonald got in over Swann. So, you know, maybe part of it's just the Canton voters and the board that selects people. But, you know, I do have several questions. I do think Marvin deserves to be in. I think that Carter should have been in earlier. And it makes you also wonder, the Steelers fan, And will Hines Ward ever see the Hall of Fame? Because with his numbers, he's not one of the greatest of all time number wise receivers, but that man was the best, one of the best receivers in his era of football.
Yeah, and I have three kind of factors, and I don't know if this applies to like linemen and whatnot, but I put I have three factors that kind of go into my Hall of Fame, if I was a Hall of Fame voter. And if you have two of the following three, then I think you're in the conversation for Hall of Famer. If you have all three, then there's no doubt. Number one, longevity. You know, obviously, if you only played 5 years, it's hard to put you in the Hall of Fame. Productivity. What did you do when you played? And the intangible. You know, and so let's just look at Lynn Swann's case. So, longevity. He played 9 years, you know. I mean, it could be longer, but I would say 9 years is certainly a long enough career to put together a nice resume. Productivity. His statistics weren't great, so I think that's kind of, I don't want to say a knock on him, but that's something that I'm sure I know as well as you, Chris, that's what held him back so long, because he just didn't have great stats because it was a different era and the offense Steelers ran. Also, having John Stallworth on the other side of him took catches away from him. And then the biggest thing to me is the intangibles. What was the intangibles? Well, Lynn Swann played amazing in, you know, the Super Bowls. And you could argue that Lynn Swann is the greatest big game receiver in NFL history, and it's really hard to argue it. It's really hard. I mean, the only other guy you can say is Jerry Rice, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe Raymond Berry, if you're going back to the 50s, because of the great, you know, NFL championship game he had in 58, but that's only one game. You know, when you look at what Rice did, I mean, Rice had a big, helped decide the outcome in three Super Bowl victories. The Broncos one was kind of a blowout. I don't think they really needed him. But I think the difference was the Steelers needed Swann to make those plays to win all three Super Bowls. If Swann doesn't have the catches in Super Bowl X, we don't win. If he doesn't have the touchdown late against Dallas, you know, we may not have won. You know, if he doesn't have the catch in the Super Bowl to start the second half of Super Bowl XIV, we don't win. I mean, that game definitely we don't win because all we had pretty much in that second half was three big plays that was all of our points, the two Stallworth bombs and the Swann bomb. So really, you know, so to me, Swann's a Hall of Famer. He doesn't have all three. And Terrell Davis for the same thing. Played 7 years, not very long, extremely productive, and he had all those intangibles. I mean, he was another guy like Swann who made his career in the postseason. So the last question with the receivers, and again, please feel free to call in, 347-850-8581, 347-850-8581, to give us your dream team of Steelers wide receivers for 1 year, who your 5B. Chris,
we're looking for five of them, a full 5-7 wide.
We're looking for five. Right. What would be, you know, let's say this team kind of reaches, you know, the level we hope and expect that they will. You know, talking about the previous Steelers units, what's your favorite Steelers receiving unit from the past?
My favorite? Well, that's tough. I grew up, well.
I'm going to go with 95. The 95 Steelers bunch would probably be mine.
Okay, that's fair. I feel like, you know, the part of me, I got to have love for the 97 squad because I was a young buck and I love Yancey Thigpen. But to be honest, I fell in love with the with the Hines Ward. And they didn't get us, this dude didn't get us a Super Bowl, but I fell in love with the Hines Ward, Plaxico Burress, and Antoine Randall-El crew. Just because of how tough Hines Ward was, Plaxico Burress could go up and get the ball, and Antoine Randall-El was just that X factor. He could throw the ball, he could catch it, he could move. They were one of my favorite trios. Of course, you can't ignore Hines and Holmes with what they did in 2008. I go back and forth because I just grew up and I remember. Hines Ward doing the Eagles dance in the end zone and Plaxico Burress just being there all the time. That was one of my favorites to watch. Man, it's just, that's the thing. There's just so many great ones, and you can't argue with Swann and Stallworth. 95 was also elite. But who knows? I mean, this year might become my favorite if Antonio Brown continues to light it up and these other guys step up. So, I'd say it's between the early 2000s crew and – you know, maybe even the Hines Ward Holmes crew, if we're talking about five receiver units that I watched personally.
Yeah, and it's always a shame because I think, honestly, my favorite one was Holmes and Ward. And it was really a shame. In 2009, they both went over 1,000 yards. It was Holmes' only 1,000-yard season in the NFL. And it's really a shame that thing wasn't exhausted. Because then, you know, the next year Holmes was gone, we went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I my father and I, whenever we talk Steelers and we talk about that season, we agree all the whole way through. If we had had Santonio Holmes for that next season, we would have won the Super Bowl because Ben would have been looking for him. He would have been more consistent, and I think the offense would have been that much more scarier. You got to worry about Hines Ward that was still kicking and playing really well. You got to worry about Santonio Holmes, one of the best threats in the league when he was hot for us. And then Mike Wallace is still burning people, and that's the thing. The 2009 crew also had to get a lot of respect. Mike Wallace came in, I think he scored 6 touchdowns his rookie season. He had a big rookie season, and that was behind Holmes, who had 1,000 yards, and Ward, who had 1,000 yards. That was another one of my favorite crews to watch because I was in love with Mike Wallace. That man, he could play so fast. I was like, I just was thinking, this kid is going to be epic, and he was for a time. You know, he was the one trick pony of the deep ball, but you know, he was a lot of fun to watch. So you know, there's a lot of I do agree that late era with Hines and Holmes, that if only it would have lasted longer, you know, maybe we would have seen more production out of that crew, and it would have been up there as my ultimate team.
I totally agree with you. I just think, you know, Wallace was always a great number two. I don't think he was ever a number one, a very, very,
right.
very good number two, and he wasn't quite ready. And he's never had that guy, that consistent guy next to him, that veteran that could take the pressure off. He went to Miami and it wasn't there. And then when he was in Pittsburgh, I mean, Hines at that point was more of like a 3 or 4 near the end of his career. I mean, look at the 2011 Steeler receiving core. You know, you had Ward, you had Wallace, you had Sanders, and you had Brown, who now all at some point in their careers were number ones and you know, all Pro Bowlers. So it's just kind of amazing that we had all that depth in our receiving unit. We couldn't beat Tim Tebow-led A-Day Bronco team in the first round. But I digress there. But, yeah, you know, the 95 Steelers I really enjoyed just because of all the depth they had. And each guy, if they were called upon, could make the big play. You know, Ernie Mills had big games. You know, he had a big game in the Super Bowl that we actually lost to Dallas. He had 8 catches. You know, Andre Hastings had 10 catches in that Super Bowl. You see Big Ben had 2 1,300-plus yard seasons, and it was just really the catalyst for our receiving corps, you know, in the late 90s. And then in the 97 team with Charles Johnson, who was always kind of like the unheralded guy, and Courtney Hawkins, who was just that consummate pro at the number 3 receiving spot.
Right.
I mean, we've always had, like, right, yeah, another 88. You know, we seem like we've always had a good stable of receivers. I just wish we could say the same things about cornerback. But, you know, moving along to the show, again, this is What's Hot with Chris Carter and Brian Diardo. I can't believe the show's already halfway young, and we've got so much to talk about still in the second half of our show. Let's talk about, you know, quickly about Adrian Peterson. You know, obviously he had the child domestic issues, you know, last year that limited his season to just a game. I wouldn't even say arguably. He was the best back in the league before all this happened, you know, a couple years ago. And then, geez, he's 3 years removed from being less than 10 yards away from Eric Dickerson's NFL rushing record, which I never thought was broken, especially in today's era of passing. You know, the new news about him, two things. He reported to the Vikings camp, and he talked today. I didn't get to see much of the interview, but it just seemed like he was just trying to, just say good things and just kind of be a positive, shed some positive light on his situation, obviously because of all the backwash that's happened to him, backlash rather. But recently this past week he tweeted, he just went on a tirade on Twitter about, you know, the injustice of the NFL with contracts. And pretty much the gist of his argument was, he doesn't like the fact that NFL owners can tweak contracts after they've been signed, and if they release a player, they don't have to pay him what the contract, you know, was, you know, and pretty much the more guaranteed money isn't given to players. Most of their money isn't guaranteed, a small amount. I guess talk about Adrian Peterson and what you think about his comments. I mean, personally, real quick, you know, I just think they're a little ill-timed. I don't have any problem with what he's saying, but you would just think, and you think the Vikings would tell him to just come in, be quiet, at least for a while, and just blend in because there's been too much publicity about you that has nothing to do with football.
You know, I agree that, you know, they need to hone in what he's saying, but, you know, I also agree with what he's saying. I'm the guy that always wants to think for, you know, not necessarily the little guy playing the NFL because you do make a lot of money, but still, the owners do hold way too much power in these negotiations. And if you want to cut a player, you know, for, you know, like how I always look at how Edgerrin James and Eddie George got treated. You know, Eddie George was the franchise for the Titans when they made that Super Bowl run and they lost at the 1 yard line. He was the reason they were there. Without Eddie George, they don't make the playoffs. But you know, as soon as he got too old, bye bye, they cut him. They didn't want to pay him as much, and especially at the running back position, you know, Adrian Peterson knows that. Listen, this is a tough position I'm in because I only got a few more years of this. And it's always been like a short end of the stick kind of thing for a lot of players in the NFL. I've got some players like Tiki Barber and Barry Sanders. You know what? I'm out. I've had my fun. I've made my money. I'm going to do other things with my life. But for Adrian Peterson, it was kind of a position where, and you, I understand he wants to put light on these things, but I don't think he went about it the right way. If you're looking at a situation where the ownership of the Vikings, they're saying that they're not going to let this guy go, and they hold this man's contract. He can hold out as much as he wants, but if you're just going to sit there and not get game day checks because you don't want to play, That's not the smartest move, and I understand he was very disapproved of how they didn't stand up with him when he was taking on the charges and everything, and he felt abandoned, and now he wants to go somewhere else. But if they're not going to let you go, you got to make the smart move and move forward. Now you can go back through channels later and address it, and you know probably do it in a better way than just go over Twitter and tweet about it and catch a lot of flack that way, but. You know, I feel his frustration. You know, you're dealing with, like, when Terrell Owens wanted more money, you know, everyone's, oh, you're ridiculous. How did you do it? Even Antonio Brown. You saw the response of Steelers fans across the Twitterverse when it was just rumored. He never even said it himself. It was rumored that he was going to hold out for more money. And people said, bye, see you later, don't care about you. And that to me, I was like, man, this guy just had two phenomenal seasons for it. Even if he really did want to hold out and not play for the Steelers because until we paid him more money, I can't argue with him. He's well played past his contract, and that's the thing. He holds no cards other than I'm not playing. So the players don't have any power. So I completely feel for Adrian Peterson, and what he's trying to say is that I'm worth more than this, and I know that my time's coming up, and that I'm probably going to get chopped and screwed a little bit. But you know he's got to learn how to play the game better. My opinion on this, I hope that he can find ways to work around it and do better with it. But at the same time, I also hope that I do want to see him back on the field because he's an electrifying player. And you're right, when he was playing a full season, he was the best running back in the league.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. And I think the timing's a little weird, especially because it's like, you know, Adrian, you would think the PR guys would, you know, the Vikings would be like, but just come back and be quiet. Just blend right in, please. But again, I agree with him. And again, I just think this whole one, maybe I'm more old school. I mean, I am Adrian's age, so I guess we're from the same generation. But, you know, I think he would have been better served doing this on, like, an outside the lines with Bob Lee wearing his suit.
Right, exactly.
Displaying a professional manner. Because the thing is, I think if you're on the outside, you're seeing a guy, you know, not really, but just kind of like, looks like you're crying. It could come off people as that, oh, this guy's just whining and crying on Twitter. How mature is that?
Right.
When really what he says, when you actually look at it, it makes sense what he's saying. You just hope that if he wants more validity and more respect for what he's doing, it's almost like going to a job interview or if you really are going to push back on an employer or supervisor. How do you go about doing it? Right. Just, you know, again, he didn't say anything wrong. And obviously he made an impact because we're talking about it tonight on the show. You know, what's hot, by the way. But, you know, I just think the way he did it could have been done a little better. That's my thing. And I do agree with you that I think, you know, most people don't look at, you know, NFL players and the money they make. And I used to be this way, of course, you know, like, you know, oh, why is he being so greedy? You know, like, you know, when Anthony Thigpen left, I thought that. You know, I didn't like him for a little bit when I was a kid. It was like, why is this guy leaving? I mean, he's making millions here. Why can't he just stay? Why is he going for a big – but, you know, now that you're older – you got to understand that, you know, they don't look at it that way. And $3 million to them means something else, you know, to us. And it doesn't mean the same thing to them. And like you said, I mean, the NFL is a, you know, a billion-dollar company, organization, maybe multi-billion, I don't know. So really, to them, you know, the owners will look at it like, hey, we're, you know, I'm a civilian or I'm just like a regular guy trying to get a paycheck. They look at it like, you know, the NFL has all this money and I want to get the biggest piece of the pie I can get. And the other thing, too, just like we've talked about, you know, Antonio is the 13th highest paid wide receiver based on his yearly contract, yearly salary. There's a lot of players that AB's better than, if we're saying he's the best, that make more than him. So obviously the guy wants to make as much as the going rate, which he's not. So that's the thing that you kind of have to think about, that these are grown men. And, you know, if you were, you know, your job, you were the best at your job, and there was somebody that was mediocre making more money than you, I think you'd be upset. And I think that's one thing that the people have to remember. But if you're going to take anything from this conversation away, it's, you know, maybe if you're trying to make a point to an employer, don't do it on Twitter. But,
don't do
you know,
it on
and
Twitter.
Another point,
yeah.
Exactly. And another point that as you know, we move ahead on the show, Jerome Bettis, you know, it's easier to like him, you know, every day, it seems like. You know, he's one of those guys that you know, when he retired, he got into broadcasting. Personally, Chris, I think he joined the wrong team, because NBC with the Sunday Night in America, that's the group he joined. You know, Bettis is, he's always been a fun-loving, happy guy. That's how people know him. You know, even when he was a player with his play football commercials with the bowling ball or driving the bus laughing with the opposing teams, you know, on his bus. That's just always how he's been. And I think when he joined ABC and he had to be objective and he had to kind of give, you know, hard answers to things, I think that kind of people didn't know how to take him, and he didn't do very well. And I like him a lot more in his second career, post-retirement, which has just kind of been a – he's just honestly just been a good civilian, and he's been kind of a civil – I don't want to say civil rights, but he's done a lot of things for charitable organizations. He's done a lot with the city of Pittsburgh, you know, with youth and poverty. You know, he's had a lot of organizations like Bowling with the Bus and things like that. And just in terms of being a Steelers ambassador, it kind of seems like he's kind of an unofficial ambassador for us. You know, he talks a lot about the Steelers. He does a lot, you know, with the Steelers in conjunction with them. You know, he goes to the Hall of Fame ceremonies. He still goes to games, goes to Pirate games even. And, you know, recently, you know, he's talked about Le'Veon Bell. And it's always nice to see the former players giving praise to the current guys. And that's one thing that maybe I think Bettis learned from Franco. Franco was always nothing but positive around the bus. Even when the bus was going after a lot of his records and people were comparing him to Franco, you know, and I think kind of the bus is kind of seeing that, you know, or, hey, you know, it's time to be supportive of the next group. But, you know, he pretty much just said earlier this week that he thinks Le'Veon can be the best running back in Steelers history. You know, personally, I think for him to have success and be the best running back in Steelers history, because you got to remember, there's a lot of them. We have John Henry Johnson from the 60s. We have Franco. We have Bettis. We even have guys that had great seasons but short careers like Barry Foster, Willie Parker. So, you know, we've had a lot of very good running backs. Even Rashard Mendenhall had a decent career. So, you know, a very nice career, actually. So, you know, to my opinion, if he's going to separate himself from the pack and be up there with Bettis, even Willie Parker and Franco, he's got to have success in the playoffs. That separates, you know, the Franco Harris's from the Barry Foster's. What did you do in the postseason? What did you do to help us win Super Bowl titles? And that's why I put Willie Parker there. He was a starting running back on two of our Super Bowl teams. He had the big run in Super Bowl 40. And even Bettis, he didn't start in any, you know, he didn't have a great, you know, run like Willie Parker did in any of the postseason games. But he showed up in large when he was in the playoffs. And he had, you know, he was a big boost to our offense closing out those playoff wins on the road in 2005. So, you know, that's kind of my beef on it. What was your take on Bettis? First of all, what he said and whether you think it'll come to fruition.
Well, I think what he said, I mean, Bettis has always been pro Steelers everywhere he goes. And you're right, he's that ambassador. He's very pro the team. And when he was talking about Bell, he's always been very, very, you know, optimistic about what things go. But he's not lying when he looks at Le'Veon Bell. This guy can do it all. He can run the ball. He hits the hole well. He seems to read the scheme well. He can block. He fills up in protection very well. If you look throughout this season and last season and the past, well, his whole career in the NFL, really, you see time and time again when there's a blitzer coming, he's not afraid to get him, and often he's speed. And then also, he's a great receiving option. And you know, I don't think he's just being a Steelers fan in saying that Le'Veon Bell could be the best ever. Because a lot of other people were saying this guy has the potential to be one of the best running backs in the game. You know, Tiki Barber came out and said, if I had to start a team with one player in the league, it would be Le'Veon Bell because of his playmaking ability. And when you look at Steelers history, there are in the history of the franchise, there are, let's see, I think there's five times where we've had a player, a skills player, you know, not a quarterback, eclipse 2,000 yards in all-purpose yardage. And of those five players, Le'Veon Bell has the most, and that was this past year when he recorded 2,215 yards. Of the other four times that it happened, the only other running back is Barry Foster, as you were talking about in 1992, where he had 2,034. And it's funny that the only other people that come up are Antonio Brown, as he comes up actually twice, and Ernie Mills. So when you're talking about Steelers history, he's doing things that, you know, we don't see too often. And especially in this new era of offensive NFL, Le'Veon Bell, he's looking like a monster. He's looking like people are coming into every week saying, how do we stop this guy? And you saw just how valuable he was when you went from the Bengals game 1 week to the Ravens game in the playoffs, and he wasn't there. And the complete element of surprise for the Steelers was gone. You know, when they tried to throw it to Ben Tate when he was in the fight, he bobbled the ball, and Doug made a great interception on it. And those are plays that usually Le'Veon Bell not only catches that ball, but he shakes three guys and gets a first down. And so when you're talking about being the best ever, I agree with Jerome. This is a guy, he's displayed lots of talent. He has great feet, great patience, and also he has the power. He can get through people. He can make people miss. It's magic sometimes, I swear. So I'm looking at guys who legitimately, if they ran the 40-yard dash, they would beat Le'Veon Bell probably in that contest. But when it comes to making a play at open field, he seems to make so many people miss. And just with great feet, great decision-making, and, just overall, that's what can make a great running back. And if he continues this, I think he will be the best running back that the Steelers have ever had. And that is, like you said, that's not just, you know, that's not some small feat there. We're not talking about, being doing something that no one, he doesn't have any competition for, because Franco and the Bus, those are the first people to think of. But, I mean, you even got to consider Willie Parker. That guy, he has the longest run in Super Bowl history, and he was pretty tough to beat for a few years and was a big part of our offense in the mid-2000s. So I do agree with Jerome. This guy has the potential to be the best, but he has to come through. He can't make any more mistakes getting himself suspended, and he has to continue to put up these numbers. And hopefully this injury that he's recovering from doesn't become a lingering problem throughout his career.
Right, I agree with you. You know, he is young, so he could still got him. He's 23 years old. So, I mean, when Bettis came to the Steelers, he was 24. Bettis was still young,
right. But
he already had those seasons in Los Angeles. When you look at greatest players in Steelers history with Bettis, I start where he started in his career, not with the Rams. And so, he already has a couple-year head start. He's going to have a three-year head start, ahead of where Bettis left off. So, or started, rather. So, you know, to me, quickly – if Bell becomes one of the best steel running backs in NFL history, this isn't rocket science, that means he's going to be one of the best running backs in NFL history. And I think that's the level he'll have to be at if he's going to be the greatest steel running back ever, because, I don't think as good as Bettis was at any point, he was regarded as the pure best running back in football, because, in 04, maybe the second half of his career, but that year Corey Dillon had a monster season and was probably the best that season. Curtis Martin led the league in rushing that season, so obviously he was the first ballot Hall of Famer, just ahead of Bettis in the rushing list. Franco, I would say maybe like 75, 76, he was regarded for a brief time as the best, because OJ also played in that era. Tony D, at the end of the 70s, obviously made a name for himself. But I think there was a little bit of a run there where Franco, obviously 74 Franco was the best, but I think in the early 70s, 72, 73, it was Zonka. And then 74 through maybe like 77, 70, yeah, probably 77 it was Franco. And then after that, people, loved Earl Campbell, rightfully so, his early years. But, that's kind of where we're at. He's going to have to be regarded as one of the best or the best running back in the NFL for, I would say, a good five-year chunk. And he's got the chance because, Adrian Peterson's, going to turn 30 if he's not already 30 by the start of the season. Marshawn Lynch is 29 years old. So those guys are kind of on their way out. And Le'Veon's got at least another 7 years, where he could put up some really big numbers, as long as he stays healthy. And I think the offense that the Steelers are going to employ with the quick passing. I don't think he's going to have 80 catches anymore. I don't know if he'll ever have 60 again. I just think they're going to try to just rest him more. And, again, D'Angelo Williams plays a big role in whether he's going to stay healthy. And after Williams is gone, whoever we bring in after that is going to, you know, play a big role in his success going forward. But, you know, outside of Bell, let's take Bell out of the picture. And I guess do we want to put the arguably tag off him or not quite yet? I think it's harder.
It's arguably because when you're looking at Bell, he didn't have the most rushing yards. He hasn't had the most rushing yards in the league for 2 years in a row. Like Antonio, like over the past 2 years, no one can
right.
say they have better numbers than Antonio Brown. That's where we can. It's legitimate for a Steelers fan to come out and say that's the best one in the league right now. But Le'Veon Bell, you could say I can argue that he's a player. He's definitely in the top five. You know that's something. He's a top five, right? You know, that's not an arguably thing. If you say he's not in the top five, well, you got a lot of arguments to put up. But when you're looking at it, I think also. When we're talking about great running backs, you also have to remember the roles that they played in their team's success to win championships. And some people like Barry Sanders, that didn't come around for them, but he still had a lot of great plays, and you recognize that. But if you look back into Jerome Bettis' career, he had a lot of great years. In 1996, when he had like 1,500 yards on the ground, there were still three players ahead of him in Barry Sanders, Terrell Davis, and Ricky Waters. But you're looking at, you know, Terrell Davis. That man is the reason that John Elway has Super Bowl rings right now. Without Terrell Davis, that Broncos team doesn't go nearly as far. When you look at Jerome Bettis, what was the crowning thing on his career? It was the fact that he won a Super Bowl in his last season, and he played a huge role in that team getting there. With how he trucked Urlacher, they talked about it in a lot of things. He was the closer in so many situations. Despite his fumble in the playoffs, he had several key roles, and he scored three touchdowns in the last game of the season that clinched the playoff berth. So, you know, Jerome Bettis' role in history, and he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm glad he's finally in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, when you're talking about Jerome's role in history, that's part of what makes him that Hall of Famer. And same with Franco. I mean, the give me the ball moment when he runs through Henderson in Super Bowl 13 and how he was the Super Bowl MVP in Super Bowl 9. Like, he contributed so many times to great Steelers teams that won Super Bowls. And that's where Le'Veon Bell is going to have to make his mark to get that title. It's not just going to be yards. He's going to have to make those big plays and big moments that leads to Lombardi.
Couldn't agree with you more. And again, I think he could. I think he could, but there's a lot on the table, and he's going to, you know, put up one of those historic careers if that's going to happen. You know, and you know, I love what you said about Davis. He's one of my favorite players of all time. I think it's a travesty he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's one of those very few occasions. He did so much in a short span that I don't know how you can't put him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you can't talk about the history of the NFL without mentioning Charles Davis. He ran for 2,000 yards. He was a part of, the back-to-back world champion Broncos and helping Elway get a ring. He's part of one of the greatest Super Bowls ever, the win over Green Bay, that one of the greatest upsets. And he had a migraine in the second quarter. That's one of those fables that's true in NFL history. So, you know. But this isn't the Bronco podcast. This is the Steeler podcast. So I'm going to move along. And, you know, we talk about the other, you know, great running backs currently in the NFL. That's a position I love. It's my favorite position, Chris. You know, a long time ago, obviously, it turned into nothing. I played running back. Loved it. And that was back when Bettis was playing. So even though I was about 130 pounds smaller than Bettis, I always visualized being him when I played and really enjoyed playing running back when I did. You know, it's a position I always loved, and it kills me that there's not as many great ones in the league now as there was, you know, when Bettis was in his prime. I mean, you had Curtis Martin, you had Terrell Davis, you had Barry Sanders, you had Emmitt Smith. I mean, that may have been the heyday for running backs. Now I guess we're in the wide receiver quarterback era. But, you know, my top three best right now, and I look, you know, we discussed this before the show, so ours are going to be a little different. My number one is Marshawn Lynch. I mean, if you're taking away Le'Veon Bell, and I think it's honestly right now between Le'Veon and Lynch, I just love the way Lynch runs. I mean, he runs with power. He should have one of the greatest touchdowns in Super Bowl history, but they decided to throw in this past Super Bowl so he didn't get it. You knew he was going to score. This is kind of a surprise, and I'm sure, Chris, that you might disagree, which I wouldn't blame you, because his name's a little bit more dated now, but when he's healthy, I think Arian Foster is one of the best, because he's versatile, he's strong, he's a tough runner. You know, he is seldom brought down on first contact, and, you know, he had a pretty good game against us in their loss to us, you know, on Monday Night Football, you know, in the 2014 mm-hmm. season. He's one of those guys, when he's healthy and the Texans have any threat of a passing game, he's still a scary guy. Number three, which I know is going to be an even bigger surprise, I'm going to go with Adrian Peterson, because just a couple years ago, he was the best running back in football. And in all honesty, you know, he wasn't injured because, you know, he didn't miss this past season due to injury. It was all his off-the-field situation. So really, honestly, you know, 30 years old, he is getting a little up there, but pretty much chronologically, he's still 20, 28, 29, because he didn't play last year. He had a whole season where he got to rest and recover. And really, running back is I think, the easiest position to come back and play. You see so many rookies having success as running backs in the NFL, because really you just kind of run to daylight. It's such an instinctive position. So as long as Adrian didn't lose much speed, it's not like he lost any vision. You know, as long as he regained his fitness, which he was a fitness freak before this, and he's going to have something to prove. He's going to be motivated. So I would say, you know, he's still in that table of best running backs in the NFL, along with Lynch, Foster when he's healthy, and Le'Veon Bell. But who's your list?
Well, you look at Lynch. I'm biased. You know, I got a lot of love for my man, LeSean McCoy. Hail to Pitt. He's such a dual threat, and I think even though the Eagles are sending him to Buffalo, I think that he's really gonna change the dynamics for that team. I think he's gonna give them a really big weapon, and with the 1-2 punch of him and Fred Jackson in the backfield, and Sammy Watkins in the, you know, as a receiver, I think that franchise, especially with their really glitz-happy defense, I think that they're gonna be able to be a wild card team. And I've always liked LeSean McCoy. He's always been a super playmaker. When he gets his hands on the ball, he's shifty, he's scary. He reminds me a lot of what Le'Veon Bell brings to the table, or vice versa. Le'Veon reminds me of what LeSean McCoy brings to the table. So he'd probably be number one outside of him right now. It might have been Adrian Peterson, you know, if we had seen him last year. But it's one of those things, like, can you really say he's the best right now? I haven't seen this guy run for, you know, a long time. So let me pump my brakes just a little bit for my excitement for AP and my respect for AP. And I'm going to say two other guys after McCoy. Number two is Marshawn Lynch, beast mode. The guy is just he's a huge playmaker. You love his heart. You love his tenacity. And he runs over people. He can dominate a game. And he doesn't have too many years of dominance ahead of him, I don't think. But at the same time, you got to respect everything that he brings to the table. And one guy, I'm going to go with a guy that's unconventional. It's you know, a lot of people talk about DeMarco Murray. A lot of people talk about Jamaal Charles. I really like Eddie Lacy. This guy, he's a bruiser. He was someone, honestly, that I wanted in the draft. I was like, man, when we took Le'Veon Bell, I was like, oh, okay, I know who that guy is. He's pretty athletic. But you know, I was like, oh, man, Eddie Lacy. And Neil Coulong, in fact, he had the same sentiment. And in fact, after Bell's rookie year, he made a huge thing about, like, man, we definitely got the wrong one. But as far as Eddie Lacy, he's a tremendous player. He's really young. And you could switch in DeMarco Murray for him. He does a great job. But I think Eddie Lacy did not have as good of an offensive line as DeMarco Murray had. And I think that he brings a lot more to the table when it comes to what he can do on his own. So that's just me. But if I had a 1-2-3 behind Bell right now, it would be McCoy, Lynch, and Lacy.
I like that list, and I'll be honest with you. I think you know, Lacy's a hard running back. I think he reminds me a little bit of Bettis. I think the issue with Lacy, and you know, obviously I've never talked to Kevin Colbert about this, but one thing that I wouldn't be surprised, because you got to remember, he was on the table. He was available when the Steelers were up for drafting a running back in 2013, and I think everybody kind of knew they needed to get a running back after Mendenhall left, and you know, we went ahead with Le'Veon, which I actually was a little disappointed, because you got to remember, Lacy had that amazing, you know, national championship performance against Notre Dame when Alabama just crushed them in the BCS title game back almost 2 years ago. And, you know, I think maybe one of the reasons why Steelers elected not to draft him was his running style is very physical, and he doesn't really protect himself. You know, if you remember when Bettis ran, he ran with his shoulders squared, he ran low to the ground, and you really couldn't get a clean shot at Bettis. you just kind of hope you could just kind of stop his momentum by grabbing him on the sides and just kind of ringing him down. Or, you know, or you just absorb the blow that he's going to dish out because Bettis ran so low at 5'11". You know, he would get down, and that's why Bettis was able to play for so long because he really didn't take a lot. He never took – I don't remember, honestly, a single time I saw Bettis take a shot to his upper body that drove him back. I don't remember. I saw him get, you know, caught from behind a lot, but he wasn't absorbing big blows. You know, Lacy takes big hits, and I think that's a big reason why, you know, maybe the Steelers didn't take him. But, you know, and I think LeSean McCoy is going to have a monster season in Buffalo. And I'm also a pit guy, Chris, so I like him too. You know, Rex Ryan, their new coach, his philosophy is ground and pound. So you know that they're going to get a steady diet of him. He's going to have Fred Jackson there, which is going to, I think he's obviously the one, and I think that's a great move for Fred Jackson because he still gets to stay in Buffalo. I mean, he's in maybe, what, 32, 33 years old? So for running back, he's kind of getting in the twilight of his career. So now to be able to help out LeSean, I would not be surprised at all if Buffalo was in the playoffs this season. I mean, I know the AFC traditionally is not very good, and traditionally New England's going to be there, and I'm sure they'll be in the playoffs again this year and win that division, but I would not be surprised at all. I mean, Buffalo was 9-7 last year, before Rex and before they got LeSean. So I think the addition of those two with the defense they have with Mario Williams will certainly get them 10 or 11 wins. And God, it's been since 99 that the Bills are in the playoffs. So hard to believe. That's now more than half my lifetime. They haven't made the playoffs. So, you know, and I don't know. For whatever reason, I've kind of always, you know, liked Buffalo. I mean, obviously, Steelers number one, and there's no number two, but you know, I think growing up in the 90s with the AFC, always hoping they'd win a Super Bowl, and not seeing them win and kind of feeling bad for their fan base, I always like to see them have success. But, you know, the last topic on the show, Chris, is
Brian, just 1 second. We got a caller who called in who wants to talk about Adrian Peterson before we move on, and it's none other than our BTSD fellow contributor and great new writer for the team, Danny Bostic. Danny, welcome to the show. You're on the air live.
Hey guys,
feel free to say what you were going to say about Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to you guys talk about Bell and Peterson, and the common denominator there is James Saxon. So we got Peterson's running back coach down with us, and that's the year Bell took off, and Kirby Wilson's back up with the Vikings. So I just wondered if you guys wanted to weigh in on that as a factor.
That's a great contribution to the conversation because that is a key thing. Adrian Peterson really. He improved his game every year in Minnesota, and when this guy came over here, he really seemed to step up for better from when he played in his first year. You could say it's part of his rookie season, but I think, yeah, maybe the change in running back coach really helped him. What do you think, Brian?
I agree, and Danny, that was first of all, thanks for listening and calling in, and Danny Bostic, you should read her stuff if you haven't yet, and she also helped out on the show a few weeks ago and did a great job, but I think one of the biggest things that he's helped Le'Veon with is his decision-making when running the football. Because if you remember when we got Le'Veon, he's a very patient back, but sometimes his patience cost him any small hole that he had. I remember a lot in 2013, he'd get the ball and then he kind of nimbly kind of graze over the line of scrimmage, and sometimes that paid off. And you know, but I think that was also a big reason why he only averaged 3.5 yards per carry, and he was closer to 5 this season. So I think that was the biggest thing. And when you watch Adrian Peterson, he was patient too. But if you're going to be a patient running back, like that, you need to have more sweep plays, more counter plays. So, you know, the play is designed for patience. It's designed that there's going to be a slower created hole. But when the hole's there, you need to be in position to make a nice burst, a good cut. And that's how Adrian Peterson runs, and that's the way Le'Veon Bell runs. I think in 2013, the Steelers tried too many dive plays and just straight directional plays with Le'Veon. And I think if you're a running back that's a little, you know, patient when he gets the ball and doesn't have that direct burst, like Bettis was just get the ball and he was hammering through the hole. Le'Veon's not that way. Willie was kind of in between, you know, kind of was just dependent on what play they were running. He was kind of adaptive to both styles. But Le'Veon is not really a dive running back. He can, but he's better if you create space pulling out your center and pulling out David DeCastro and kind of creating like that. And I think that's the biggest thing that this addition to the coaching staff did, and that's a big reason why he had success. So thank you, Danny, for bringing that up. And I actually thought you were going to talk about what he said on Twitter because, you know, I know you've written some articles about the NFL and the front office and things of that nature. But, yeah, Adrian Peterson has been in the news a lot lately, and that does bring us to our last topic of conversation, which is those running backs, the five running backs the greatest wide receiving combo in Steeler history. If you have a dream team, if you can pick five wide receivers that you think are, you know, in Steeler history, hey, this is my five. I'm going to the Super Bowl, and I'm playing, you know, New England. I guess it wouldn't be New England. It would be Seattle. If you're playing the Legion of Boom in the Super Bowl, what five receivers from the Steelers historically are you taking, and let's rank them 1 through 5. Chris, I'll let you do the honors of going first.
Well, first, I'd like to thank Danny for joining the show. She probably can't hear us right now because we're extending on to the extra part of the podcast where you have, if you're listening to this or listening to us on iTunes, we thank you for listening to that. But if you haven't checked out Danny Bostic as a writer on BTSC, go on and read her recent articles. She opens up about the drone program going through the NFL as well as, you know, Demaryius Smith. Are he and Roger Goodell going to be a great rivalry for negotiations? But going forward to answer your question, the top five receivers, and again, my bias comes into play. It is a big deal for me. My number one is Hines Ward just because I want that guy that's going to go out there and be the nitty-gritty, the tough guy. He's going to lay it on the line every time. He just made so many big plays, and he was my favorite Steeler going through everything. That's my guy. So Hines Ward would be my first choice at wide receiver, and I may pay for that one, but, hey, I'm going to take him. My number two would be John Stallworth. He had some of the great – whereas Chris Brown had several big plays in Super Bowl history, you know, it's argued, you could argue that John Stallworth had just as many. You know, he was him and Swan were both major contributors to that offense, and their greatness together was just unparalleled at that time for a 1-2 punch at receiver. I remember Bill Nunn, the recruiter who was helping the Steelers forge their new dynasty, he said he wanted John Stallworth before Lynn Swan because he saw what was in Stallworth. He would be my number two. Number three would be Swan, just because he's tough as nails and those great plays. And honestly, you could switch in my number four for my number three or my number two or even my number one, Antonio Brown. He's a super playmaker. This guy's doing everything right now. He lacks the hardware that the first three guys have and what the fifth guy that I'm going to announce has. But I think that we're going to get it in this time here because he's that great of a player. This guy, he's a route runner. He's quick. He's fast. He has great hands. And he seems to be improving every season, which is scary to see if he keeps escalating what he could be in another year or two's time. And then my number five guy, just for the clutch factor, just because he's got one of the most iconic moments in Super Bowl history for the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's San Antonio Holmes. That playoff run in 2008 and 2009 was magical. How he scored the punt return against the Chargers, how he had the insane receiving touchdowns against the Ravens, and then just what he did on the entire drive to get to the point where he then caught the winning touchdown catch and arguably the greatest touchdown catch in the history of the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 43 against the Cardinals. He has to get on my number five. And you can say Big Ben, you can say List, you can say no, but he gets it just for that. So those are my top five. Brian, who are your top five?
We have four of the same five. I don't think we have any. I think we have one maybe in the same order, but none are in the same order. And it's crazy, and I give you tons of credit for going with Ward as first. You're not being an old-timer like me and being a good old boy and just picking Swan Stallworth, which I did, and I actually went Swan Stallworth. And to me with Swan, it just comes down to what he did in the biggest moments. Like we talked about, you know, earlier on the show. He just, you know, the Super Bowls, the great catches he made, not even the Super Bowls. I mean, in Denver, in the divisional playoffs, defending AFC champs, he had a big touchdown in that game. He just always came up with those plays we absolutely needed him most. And he did it in such a taking manner. And I think just because I'm shorter and always, you know, I've always, you know, if you ever, like, in the backyard thinking about playing football, I mean, Swan's a shorter guy, but he still played like a, you know, like a, with a tough mentality. You know, if you look at those America's games, and I know you know what I'm about to say, Mike Wagner always said, he could have played in our backfield. He was so tough. Swan is mine. You know, really it comes down to this. I mean, he made big plays to help us win three Super Bowls. When you can't say that about the other receivers in Super Bowls. John Stallworth, two. And I think the reason why two is he had all three. When you look at my old Hall of Fame credentials, he had longevity. He played, what, five more seasons than Swan? He was productive. He had many of the Steelers' single season. I think he had all the Steelers' single season and career records until Big Ten, until Hines Ward, until Antonio Brown were starting to pick them off. And obviously the intangibles. I mean, he could make game-breaking plays on slant and short passes like he did in Super Bowl 13 to tie the score against Dallas, catching a short pass and going 75 yards to the house. He had the big playability deep, those two deep balls to seal Super Bowl 14. Just everything he was able to do. He's a long-range guy, and he also could block. He helped bring Franco home on a big block to help clinch the 75 AFC title game. So for those reasons, it's Swan, it's Stallworth. Number three is your boy, Hines Ward. I love Hines. You got to remember to keep your head on a swivel when 86 is on the field. Just ask Rivers, the old linebacker for Cincinnati. Hines Ward, not much to say about him. Everything he was able to do, statistically, longevity, intangibles. It was just one of those things when he played. It was just kind of everybody knew that he was the best blocking receiver in football, and he wore the black and gold. So enough said about Hines Ward, obviously also his heroics in Super Bowl 40. Number four is already AB. I mean, very seldom in our Steeler history, kind of like with running back or really any franchise history, you know, it's hard to say that for a time you had a player that was the best in his position. You know, there's probably a lot of teams, like have the Bengals ever had any player, except maybe Anthony Munoz, that's it, where you could say, oh, that guy was the best in his position. And Antonio Brown right now is the best receiver in football. We're taking the arguably off, everybody. So when you read our articles tomorrow and in the future with Chris and I, arguably he's gone with Antonio until otherwise. He's the best in the game. And, you know, the fact that he's got the consistency with the 5 for 50 every game, he's got the insane numbers that rival Marvin Harrison, Jerry Rice, Chris Carter's best season. He's in rarefied air right now, and I think he's a guy that the only thing that's really missing on his resume is Super Bowl success, or success in the playoffs, and I think that's coming. I think you're going to see him make a big catches in postseasons for years to come. He'll be 27 when the season starts, so he's still a very young guy. And then the last one's a little different. You did mention his name, Chris. Do you know who I'm going to say? What do you say?
Number 82. Number 82. From the mid 90s, you gotta be talking about Yancey Thigpen. Am I correct?
You're correct, and I think the reason why I picked him for a couple of reasons over Santonio. First of all, Santonio, he had the amazing Super Bowl run. He had that great run, but you know, really when you look at his stats, I mean, really Yancey had better stats. And Yancey mm-hmm. and them played in Pittsburgh at about the same amount of time. But Yancey did it. I mean, Santonio did it with a Hall of Fame quarterback in Roethlisberger. No knock on Cordell Stewart, but he's not the caliber of passer that Big Ben is. And that's who Yancey had that big season with in 97. And then he had the same big season with Neil O'Donnell again, who is obviously not Ben Roethlisberger. So he did it when defensive backs knew he was getting the ball. He did it when he was double-teamed. He did it against the other team's best cornerback day in and day out. And when those two seasons – you know, I know, you know, AB's had great numbers and everything, but it's hard to find a receiver that's had that big of an impact on a team than Yancey had those seasons. I mean, you know, we were down big against the Broncos in a game. He scored three touchdowns in a row in the same quarter, the same play. Stewart threw it up on them three times, and he just caught it over Darian Gordon. And how did Darian Gordon still start for Denver on those Super Bowl teams, I'll never know. But, you know, Yancey was just that guy. He was that guy that helped us get to a Super Bowl. We didn't win it, but he helped us get there. And, you know, he helped us get back to the AFC title game and 3 points away from getting back to another Super Bowl in 97. And the other thing, too, his presence was really felt and evidenced by the year after he left, we went 7-9 with Charles Johnson as our best receiver. The next year, Courtney Hawkins as our best receiver, we went 6-10. It wasn't until Hines Ward kind of stepped up with Plexico that we started having success again. So, you know, he was a very impactful player, Yancey Thigpen was, and you know, for me, you know, hey, Santonio went to OSU when I went there. I interviewed him a couple times. I heard about the guy. And I was so pumped when he came to Pittsburgh. But the way he left and the way he couldn't conduct himself off the field, not only did that deprive us of seeing more great seasons with him because of his selfishness, but, you know, he cost us a chance to win another Super Bowl. Because I completely agree with you. That was the difference between us winning and losing against Green Bay. You know, we didn't have our number one receiver. We got there with a decent receiving core, But Hines Ward was at the twilight of his career. AB wasn't AB yet. Emmanuel wasn't Emmanuel yet. It was kind of a makeshift receiving group. Mike Wallace did the best he could, but he was very limited. He, you know, I remember in that Super Bowl, Ben tried the same plays with him that he tried with Santonio a couple seasons earlier in Super Bowl 43, and it wasn't working. You know those quick bubble screens where pretty much you're just letting him be an athlete, make plays? Wallace wasn't the same athlete Santonio was. Santonio was extremely special. I think that's why I left him off the list, because while he helped us certainly win a Super Bowl, and we probably don't win that one without him, he leaves bad taste in the mouth with what he did, you know, a couple years later where he wasn't around, and that really cost us.
And don't forget, the year before that the Steelers lost the Super Bowl to the Packers, they played those same Packers in 2009 in a must-win game to keep their playoff hopes alive at Heinz Field. And, you know, Ben with Santonio Holmes and Mike Wallace and Hines Ward, he lit them up, and that was arguably the best game of his career. He threw five touchdowns over 500 yards. It was the first time he did 500 yards. And he hit Mike Wallace with that toe-tapping touchdown at the very last second to win the game by 1 point. One of the most fun Steelers games in non-playoff seasons that I've ever seen on my own account. And I think a big part of what the offense had was Santonio Holmes. And I totally agree with Yancey Thigpen. He was the first wide receiver that I was a big fan of. Well, cause, I mean, I was 5, 6, and 7 around the time of, you know, of that era. So I was still learning football, but I just remember seeing that guy. He just seemed to catch everything thrown to him. So I can, you know, I completely agree. If you're throwing in a top five receiver, he deserves to be in the mentions, and you could definitely put him at the five spot and, you know, and put him as an argument there. You know, but, you know, for me, I just, that 2008 run, I totally agree. You know, his lack of longevity and him getting himself in trouble, you know, that, and you saw how he was a leader for a bit for the Jets, and he became a head case for them, and they had to get rid of him. But, you know, for me, I would take that 2008 run over not having that 2008 run, because I don't think we win the Super Bowl without him in 2008. But I totally agree. Yancey Thigpen, one of the best we've ever had.
All good points, Chris, and I need to one day get over my bitterness and enjoy the seasons we did have with him. Because you're right, you know, the number 10, my guy, former Buckeye Santonio Holmes, he did enough for us where I should let go of my bitterness and just embrace what he's done. But Yancey was my guy, and I still go with Yancey as number 5 for now. But that wraps up our show. It was a great show, as always, Chris. I'm actually going to be heading to California for one of my friend's weddings, so I'm actually – you're only going to see one story for me in the next week, and that's going to be tomorrow. I do a throwback Thursday. Bill Cowher and the 90 Steelers' first playoff victory. It was over to the Cleveland Browns back in 1994. So I hope you enjoy that throwback Thursday. And, Chris, I'm sure you're going to be busy writing articles along with the rest of our great staff. Thanks to Jeff Hartman, again, our editor. Before we leave, Chris, real quick, when we talk next Wednesday, because the show I'm hoping will be next Wednesday, that's when I get back to California. What will the series be in the NBA and the NBA Finals? What will the count be next time we talk?
Oh, okay. So wait, tomorrow night
there'll be three games at that point.
There'll be three games. I got 2-1 Warriors. I really think that the Warriors are gonna bring it to them. I honestly, you could flip a coin for me. This series could be a going 7 game. The Cavs are so tough, but the Warriors come out to play. I think they're gonna come out to play, and it's gonna be super fun to watch. But I do think they'll take a 2-1 lead, and then Cleveland's going to tie it up in Game 4, and then Game 5 is just going to be insane.
All right, Chris, let me ask you another question. What state do I live in?
You live in Ohio, so you've got to be a Cavs fan.
Oh, I've watched at least 60 Cavs games this season, and I've gotten a lot of crap from my Pittsburgh fans saying, how can I do this? Well, we don't have a team in Pittsburgh, so I don't cheer for Cleveland and anything else but basketball. I could give a rat's you know what about their streak of not winning championships. I love it. But and if they are going to win one, let's have it be in
basketball.
I've been a LeBron fan forever. I watched him play in high school. I went to a couple games this season. Knock on wood, I will be at game 4 or 5 of the NBA Finals. I'm trying to get tickets there.
So
it's going to cost quite a bit. That's my motivation when I go to California. That's how you don't spend money on vacation. When you know you've got something coming, but when you get back that you need to spend money on. So hopefully I avoid doing too much in California, and I can go ahead and do that. So I'm going to go ahead and say it will be 2-1 Cavs. I think they win game 1. I think the Warriors have some jitters. I think the Warriors respond in game 2 to avoid getting, you know, falling in the hole of the 2. And I think the Cavs win their first game back in Cleveland. But we will discuss that when we reconvene next Wednesday. Thanks again,
yes,
Chris,
indeed,
for being such a great co-host. We'll talk next week. Signing off, this is Brian Diardo saying so long. Have a good night. Have a great week. And as always, it's a great day to be a Steelers fan.